Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi listeners, RCEP City is back with two bonus episodes for you. Today's is a bit different from my usual as it's co-produced with the youth homeless charity Centrepoint, who have arranged a very interesting interview for this episode.
We will be discussing the HRA, Homelessness Reduction Act. Now if you don't already know much about the HRA, please feel free to go back and listen to episode 4 first. We are joined by Bob Blackman, who is MP for Harrow.
Harrow East. Yes.
Harrow East, okay. You introduced the Homelessness Reduction Act, and so we're going to have a little chat about the Homelessness Reduction Act, and I've got some questions I'd like to ask you.
Okay.
So there's already been quite a bit of coverage about the aims of the HRA and the funding put in place to implement it. I'd like to ask you why you chose reducing homelessness to be a topic of your private member's bill.
Well, there's a number of reasons. The first is that obviously I served in local government for 24 years prior to being elected to Parliament, and I've seen the impact of homelessness on people on an individual basis. I knew what the position was in my own local authority in Brent at the time of how homeless people were treated. And what we did as politicians was to say very simply, you have to ration the service you're getting. So that if someone approaches you who doesn't qualify for help, then you say, very sorry, but there's nothing we can do for you. I also sit on the Housing, Communities and Local Government Select Committee. And at the time, we did an eight-month study into homelessness in England. We produced a very detailed report. And what didn't surprise me, I suppose, was that most people who gave evidence to us who were homeless said, all I need is some help and advice to get myself back into housing. Because most people face this crisis at least once in their lives, and therefore they need help and advice. People that suffer it a number of times know where to go. But the first time you suffer this is the real crisis point, and you don't know where to go. Where would you go? You go to the local authority. So when I was drawn number two in the private member's ballot, I thought, well, this is an ideal opportunity to actually do something about it. The government opposed it to start with. They weren't going to support the proposed bill. We'll put together a wish list from the housing charities and landlords associations and to a certain extent local authorities, and then we turned that into the legalese that's required for a bill, and then obviously we took that on through pre-legislative scrutiny in the committee, looked at the bill and looked at the impact of that and made recommendations after receiving evidence from various different interested parties. We then made changes to the draft bill. And then by the time we got it into committee, it was 6 weeks of very detailed scrutiny in committee and 21 government amendments to the bill. After that, we ended up with a very comprehensive piece of legislation, which aims, it's very simple, it's if you're homeless, then provided you've qualified by living in the area for 6 months or more, you can go to your local authority before you're homeless. It's very important because the idea is to prevent people from becoming homeless rather than drill the symptoms, such as rough sleeping or someone literally with nowhere to put their head at night. So the aim is that up to 56 days before someone becomes homeless, then they sit down with the local authority and say, I'm going to be homeless in 2 months' time. What can you do to help? And then there's actions on the individual, actions on the local authority, and at the end of the process, an offer of accommodation of 12 months private sector tenancy, because that's likely where it'd be. Is got to be offered.
So since the HRA came into force, we've seen a wide variation between local authorities in terms of the actions they've taken to comply with the Act. What recourse is there for those in the areas such as Thanet, where it's been ignored?
Well, obviously, we knew from the outset, as I outlined, we're going to have a problem with people who've been trained to deny service. You can't suddenly overnight, say, go from rationing the service to being, come in, have a seat, how can we help you? That's a very difficult cultural change to make. So we can change the law, but actually changing the culture takes a lot longer. And the local authorities that have done this very well have recruited new staff and trained them up in the new responsibilities. I think a lot of local authorities have tried to switch staff from being housing officers who were schooled in how to deny people service to now being how to help. And so I think there's a real dilemma. Local authorities, by the way, of course, don't have to do this themselves. They can enlist local charities or third sector organisations to do the job for them. And often that might be the best way, for the simple reason these are people that don't necessarily, you know, are officialdom, as it were, and therefore they're likely to be more trusted in their approach. Now, one of the things that we did as we were putting this act through Parliament was to put various hooks in there. There's obviously a code of guidance on what local authorities should do to discharge their duties. But we also included, I have to say, at my insistence, we had the hook whereby if local authorities do not comply with the letter or spirit of the law, then the Secretary of State has the ability to introduce a statutory code of practice which will force them to do the job that they want to do. Now, we didn't want to do that straight off for the simple reason that local authorities... We wanted their local authorities to come up with inventive ways of actually dealing with the problem. Unfortunately, of course, there are some local authorities who pay lip service to the law and others that say, yes, well, we must really do this. So a lot of the local authorities that were involved in the trailblazing activities have embraced the spirit of the Act, have seen their costs reduce and the cost of temporary accommodation reduce, as well as the cost of helping people, as they've embraced it, rather than trying to put up barriers to prevent people from getting help. So I think this is a key point, and you know, I addressed a conference on this particular issue today, and we had a range of speakers talking about the widespread difference there is between different local authorities. Clearly, you've got to have some sympathy with the local authority that's suddenly receiving a huge spike in terms of the number of people that are homeless through no fault of their own. But on the other hand, they've got a legal duty and they can obviously offer appointments and set this up over a period of time. But what is most important is they don't do what they used to do. And what they used to do was to say, yes, OK, you're going to be homeless in 2 months' time. Come back when you are homeless and we'll look at what we can do for you. Because that means that someone arrives in the housing office, their bag's packed, literally nowhere to go, not knowing where they're going to sleep that night, and the local authority have got to do something for them. Now, that's going to be costly to the local authority and obviously a state of high anxiety for the individual. Equally, if they allow that to continue through to eviction, then the likelihood is the landlord has taken out court action against them, they've incurred bailiff costs, they'll have also got county court judgments against them, which means that no one is going to offer them a tenancy. So actually, it's a foolhardy thing to do. Much better to identify a route forward, be it lengthening an existing tenancy, be it an alternative private sector tenancy, well, whatever it is, but there are means by which it can be processed. And unfortunately, there are some local authorities that are reluctant to do this. Well, they better wake up to the fact that if they don't do it, they may be forced to do it in the very near future.
I think that's really reassuring for some people that are in areas, like as I mentioned, Thanet, where on their website, they basically signpost people who are non-priority need to just go to another area because they say we don't have any homeless services. And I think that's something that I really see is in certain areas, Kent, Cornwall, Devon, there's definitely a push to push people more into the centre of England, really, to try and access services. And I think that that's really unfair on the areas that have seen to take people who maybe aren't from their area and provide them and trying to provide them with a service. I think every council should look to commission services, as you said, charities and other organisations, to be able to support those who aren't in priority need.
Yeah, one area I would just have sympathy with the local authorities, obviously, is the supply of affordable homes.
Yeah.
And clearly we have got to address that. And that's not covered by the Act, obviously. The Act was intended to prevent people from becoming homeless in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew from the word go that we were going to get a spike because we see the number of rough sleepers there are on the streets, and that's the visible signs of homelessness.
Mm.
But we also know that there's 300,000 people sofa surfing out there. Well, they probably have never approached their local authority for help and assistance. Now they've got the capability to do so. And, you know, the reality is that very quickly, if you're sleeping on a friend's sofa,
mm.
You run out of friends very quickly, and therefore you're next door to being sleeping on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So actually combating that is the most important thing that we can do across the piece.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So from the few decision letters we have seen via the Centrepoint helpline, it's clear that housing officers are still confused by the legislation. They apply prevention duty to those who are already homeless, or they proceed with applying prevention duty, ignoring that the person is in fact already clearly in priority need and entitled to interim accommodation pending a decision. Can you talk about how your private members bill approach the issue of monitoring compliance and what action would be taken by the government against the council's failure to deliver their statutory duties?
Well, clearly there is nothing in here, in the Act, that changed the council's statutory duty to house vulnerable people. But the reality was that, you know, if you approached a local authority because you're homeless, the first question they'd ask you is, well, have you got children under the age of 16?
Mm-hmm.
Are you registered for mental health problems or physical health problems? Are you a drug addict or abusing other substances? And if the answer to those questions is, well, no, then they'd say, goodbye, good luck, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So, but nothing changes. For if you qualify through the statutory duty, then all that means is that you go through the normal process.
Mm.
The Act is intended to have two filters to start with. In other words, so you're homeless through no fault of your own, and you could be single, you may have, you know, split up from a relationship, you could be living in prison, you could be leaving healthcare, you could be children who've reached the age of 19 in care, and therefore reaching the end of the local authority statutory duty to house. Now there's a duty to continue that care. You know, there's a whole range of other people that we look at who then can be, well, should be assisted under the legislation. Now, all of those people have to be assisted by the local authority if they're homeless. Now, obviously, there are issues around can the local authority find reasonable accommodation for them and such like. There's, obviously challenges in this regard. But there's also duties on cooperation from other departments before someone gets to that stage. And it shouldn't just be for the housing office to have to deal with the consequences. Now, if a housing office doesn't do what it should do, then obviously the government is going to monitor this. They're conducting consultation. I'm not sure if it's been issued yet, but I know they're doing a consultation. The HLG Select Committee is doing a once-off inquiry into how this has gone. We're going to invite people to give us feedback on what's happened. And indeed, I think Crisis are doing a very detailed report on how the Act has been implemented and lessons to be learned. There are issues around funding. I'm going to accept that completely. But you know, what we've got to look at is what is the experience thus far?
I understand that there's issues around funding. From what I've noticed is, as you mentioned, there's a cultural change from just turning people away to now looking at other ways in which they can support people, getting to know better the services that are in their area. On the helpline, we do have like local councils, housing officers phoning us and saying, I don't really know where I can send this person who's non-priority need. I don't know anything about the services in my area. So I think there's an element of some emphasis being put on local housing officers and local councils to research what other services are in their area for people who are non-priority need.
Well, can I say, the government gave a substantial amount of money for the data build up for local authorities to look at their IT systems and also build up the data. One thing above all else that local authorities have got to do is to establish a data bank of homes that can be provided to people that are homeless. You know, there's no good. I mean, one of the experiences that even some of the best authorities had was if someone who's homeless approached the local authority, they'd be given a list of estate agents and told to troop round and see them. Or they may be given access to a computer. You know, you can Google what's available. Well, you know, that frankly, when you're facing the crisis of either I haven't got anywhere to live now, or I'm going to be homeless in a very short time frame, you know, that's no good. And we've got to have a position whereby they've built up the knowledge of what's available in their area. They should be the font of knowledge, and I think that's the key. If they can't do it, then they should outsource it to a third party provider, probably a charity or someone that can help and assist, so people that can get the help and advice they need. Because one of the things is that definitely people that are street homeless definitely need a position whereby sympathy and understanding of the crisis that they faced, because there'll be a reason why someone, and everyone is a unique case. Equally, people who are sofa surfing, there'll be a reason for it. You know, people don't choose to be homeless. I mean, that's one of the other myths around, that in some way, shape or form people are freeloaders or whatever. That's not the case. People face a crisis because often through no fault of their own.
I feel really reassured that you've said that, because I think one of the things that upsets me quite a bit from what I hear from young people and what I've heard directly from housing officers when they've sent us copies of their assessments is comments like, I don't think that person's actually homeless because they turned up to the office looking clean.
I mean, if the idea is that people are going to turn up dishevelled, dirty, looking hungry, not having cleaned their, so I mean, that's ridiculous, frankly. For young people, of course, often they can't live at home. And it may be because their father and mother have split up and there's a new partner involved who doesn't want them around. Yeah, all sorts of things happen. We know that with the case, it's one of the principal causes of homelessness amongst young people, for a start. And no one looked at this particular issue in terms of local authority responsibility. Now they've got responsibility. And I did some field work in Manchester before we introduced the bill, and looked at, even in Manchester, the young people were going under the radar. And there were hostels available. And of course, one of the problems we know is that a lot of the young people on the streets end up using spice, and that is a seriously, once people, someone's addicted to spice, they're like a zombie, and so it does take a really long time to actually sort them out in secure accommodation when they're taken off the streets. But much rather we get people off the streets first, and local authorities can discharge their duties by saying to young people, look, okay, you can't live with your parents. Is there an uncle or aunt or someone else in the family you can go and live with? Grandparents. Yeah, so it's not just saying, oh, well, this is a way by which someone can acquire a flat of their own. You know, it's a bit of tough love here to say, look, we don't want you to sleep on the rough on the streets. we don't want you in bad company. You know, is there an alternative route of accommodation, mm-hmm. as well as looking at the means of providing housing if that's the right route forward? But it's all an individual case that has to be looked at.
In the few HRA personal housing plans that we've seen, the main suggestion is for the person to go and find private rented accommodation. However, with the continued freeze on local housing allowance, this can prove impractical. A recent study from the Chartered Institute of Housing called Missing the Target found that more than 90% of the LHA rates don't cover the cheapest rents. Do you think we could see more moves to begin raising the LHA rate in the budget or a comprehensive spending review? Because I feel without this rise in LHA rates, it's going to limit the effect that the Homelessness Reduction Act can have, and the Homelessness Reduction Act therefore isn't providing meaningful assistance if councils are just going to say you should go and look at the private rented market when it's becoming clear that, you know, LHA is not going to cover rent.
The aim behind the Homelessness Reduction Act was always that people would likely end up in private rented accommodation, and that was the offer that would be made by the local authority, and it should be a 12-month tenancy as well. So from that perspective, that was always going to be the aim. I think there's much more has to be done by housing associations to accommodate homeless, genuinely homeless people, rather than just people off the waiting list. I think there's a big challenge here that has to be undertaken. Equally, the supply of housing is the crunch. Because at the moment, the problem is that not enough affordable housing is being built, so as a result of which, the market naturally inflates. My concern about increasing the LHA is that landlords will just increase rents, and so actually won't do any good for the people at the bottom. The real answer is to increase the supply quite dramatically. And one of the solutions I've suggested to the Chancellor, whether he looks at this, is a lot of public land is sold off for housing development. So what we do is we say to the Health Service, the Ministry of Defence, local authority, sell the land for the maximum amount you can get. So they do. And then we're surprised when the housing that goes on it is very highly priced or very highly rented. Actually, there's a solution to this. Instead of doing a benefit process, what we could do is say to whoever's releasing the land, the Treasury will give you the value of the land, provided the housing is affordable. Then you get affordable housing at rents people can afford, or a price if they want to buy the property, at a price they can afford. And you know the local authority, health authority or whoever, are also getting their money. That prevents this spiral which goes on of leading to ever-increasing rents. And if we can get to that stage, the other benefit of this is that if we get to that stage with affordable housing with reasonable rents, that will drive the market down as well. I always worry about interfering with markets because they have a way of unexpected consequences of interfering. The local housing allowance is one of those that I think is an interference in the market, which isn't always... I mean, if we could increase those rates, but my worry would be they'd increase rapidly and continue increasing rapidly and actually wouldn't solve the problem.
Yeah, I appreciate that would be a concern, that it would be putting money into private landlords that and it may just keep going up. I think at the moment though, that is being the main thing that's coming out of the personal housing plans, especially for young people, and I imagine for the rest of the homeless community, is to go and look for private rented. And I feel like that isn't meaningful assistance really for...
No, but it should be the local authority helping someone find private rented accommodation. You know, this is the plan. If the local authority is doing this right, actions on the local authority, actions on the individual, leading to an offer of accommodation, almost certainly, as you say, the private rented sector. Mm-hmm. But by definition, if you've done the plan correctly, it's going to be something that someone can afford. Because there's no point in sitting down and saying, "Well, here's a wonderful new property," and people say, "Well, you know, my income doesn't allow me to rent that property." Mm-hmm. Well, that's a waste of everyone's time. Mm-hmm. So we've got to get to that stage. My concern is ensuring that we get the increase in the supply. Because if you don't get the increase in supply, then actually nothing is going to change in this. And all that happens is the local authority will say, "Well, there's nowhere around here, but you can move to Newcastle if you're from Kent. You move to Newcastle because property price is a lot cheaper there." But sorry, hang on, I've got a job down in Kent. How do I, do I give up my job and move to Newcastle and be unemployed? It's a nonsense. Our other problem as well is the local authorities that are moving people on out of their area. There's another knock-on effect. and that is that someone to be classified as homeless under the Homelessness Reduction Act has got to be resident in the area for 6 months or more before they're owed a duty. Where people get moved around, I have a concern, which we're going to look at, I have a concern that all that happens then is they get moved on from one local authority to another, and then in a few months' time they become homeless because the landlord wants the property back. They then foist it on the next local authority, and you just get people on a spiral.
Yeah, and it breaks up their local connection. Well, it breaks up their local connection. I think what I've seen when it comes to local authorities is they're putting a lot more the responsibility for searching for that accommodation on the person that's coming homeless. Local authorities will give themselves the easiest action to do that. Yeah. What would you recommend to someone who's kind of found that in that situation? Would you suggest that they try and access legal advice, which I know is getting harder and harder, though?
Yeah,
because legal aid cuts.
Well, it's interesting enough. I mean, this comes to say, Shelter are looking for a test case. So I think there'll be a test case where discrimination has taken place, and clearly that will force them.
The DSS
we can set the law, but that doesn't mean to say that people won't find a way around it. You know, as soon as we put in things like reasonable. What's reasonable to you or I may not be reasonable to the person looking for a property.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
So on the next bonus episode, I will be interviewing a homeless couple I've got to know over the past 4 months who are rough sleeping in Westminster. I hope you can join us for what will be the last bonus episode in season one. But before you go, I have a favour to ask. To bring Our Sub City back for series two later on this year, we need to get more listeners. So could I ask that you take some time to review the podcast and most importantly, share it on social media with your family and friends. And if you want to get in touch, you can do so via the socials.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.